This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Former AFL player has just become the first openly bisexual male player in AFL history, and his announcement shines a light on the culture of the AFL, one that he says has been marked by homophobia and unhealthy masculinity. And while AFL leaders have congratulated him for coming out, there are calls for the league to go further. Well, joining us is Dr. Eric Dennison from Monash University, who has been researching discrimination in culture and sport. Eric, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for your interest.
What was your first reaction when you heard about Mitch Brown's announcement?
It was kind of mixed, because I was looking at all the people congratulating him and thinking, what are you congratulating him for? Like, this is not a celebratory moment. It's a deep reflection moment because of the things he's calling out in the sport, which, you know, he didn't necessarily need to do that. Other players who've come out in the past haven't been so vocal about what needs to change like he was. But it was disappointment. But then at the same time, I was happy that the sport, you know, finally has an openly gay athlete in the men's sport.
Now, Mitch shared some troubling stories about the culture he experienced in the AFL. What do these reveal about the environment players have been navigating?
Not a lot new from what we already know. And you've had many guests on your show and other shows on Joy talking about the pervasive homophobic language that's used in the AFL, but also other sports like rugby and soccer. So there's been lots of research on that. There's no question about how deeply rooted these behaviors are in the culture. What was interesting was that he sort of brought to light the drivers of this language in most cases, which is this toxic negative masculinity that permeates sport. And that's truly the problem that impacts everyone, not just LGBTQ plus people. That impacts anyone who plays sport. And, you know, recent data shows that it doesn't matter if a young person identifies as gay or is straight. The being called homophobic slurs in sport or being targeted with it is just as likely to put them at risk of negative health outcomes like self-harm and suicidation. So, you know, we really need to stamp these things on the head. And I guess coming from him as an insider, it has more impact than coming from like you or me as a researcher or, you know, others who've been on your show, or even Jason Ball for that matter, because, you know, you need to be really part of the fabric of the sport to be taken seriously. And he definitely is part of the fabric of the sport.
We've seen the AFL leadership, including the CEO, publicly support Mitch, which has been very visible. Is an apology needed? And what difference would that make?
Absolutely. And that's why, I mean, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I have been watching closely to see sort of what they're going to do next. And you would think in a situation like this that they would come out, they would apologize, and then they would actually make some kind of commitments, because there's been, you know, the AFL Players Association raised this in sort of the few days since he came out. It was on the back of, obviously, Isaac Rankin using, you know, the sick slur in the past year and a half and being banned from games for a bit. So I guess, you know, at this stage, I've kind of just given up on the AFL doing anything, because you would have thought they would have come out with something in the last week, and they haven't. And it's consistent, because 20 plus years ago, the government told them they needed to introduce a series of things to protect, gay and LGBTQ plus young people at that point. And they didn't do it. Then they went on national television and signed a commitment to become a world leader in addressing homophobia in sport in 2014. They didn't do anything about it.
A long time ago.
And so here we are, you know, yet again. They're committing to do stuff and make the game inclusive. And, you know, this was the time for them to actually come out with something, right? It's been a week and nothing. From my observations, it's sort of typical AFL that they go in crisis management mode. They say what's needed during when to get out of that moment, And then once the moment's done, they just move on and look, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business. And I think that's very much how they look at it.
The thing that strikes me about this whole situation, Eric, is the power of that unhealthy masculinity and the power that it has to bring people together and silence people and not do what is right. Would you agree?
Hmm. Oh, yeah. That's what our research is focused on now. So we tried a bunch of different things to drive change in sport. So I've been researching this for over 10 years. And we've tried different testing what would work to drive change to the language. And the thing that works really, really well is Pride Games. That's the only pre-discrimination intervention that three studies have found reduce homophobic language by about half. And that's really remarkable because we haven't been able to do that with any other intervention in any other environment. So that's a, you know, kudos to Jason Ball for driving that, and kudos to others like Proud to Play, really sort of encouraging clubs to adopt these initiatives. The issue is that even when they do those games, the language is still being used. And that's where we need to find the sort of person in power in those situations. And that's typically the captain and vice captain. That's who's really going to drive things. So we need to get them on board. We need to get them agreeing that they want to create a positive culture, and even hold their coach's behavior in line, and then do things like Pride Games, Respect Women Games, NIDOC Week. You know, those kinds of things are really good points in time where these captains and leaders can have these conversations and drive change in the group, because these things are not going to be changed with a poster on the wall or, you know, a catchy social media campaign. These are very much group dynamic behaviors and problems, right? Toxic masculinity occurs when a bunch of men get together in a social setting, and that group then needs to change. You can't change it from the outside. They need to decide. And that's where we need these leaders to really lead that conversation on, hey guys, what kind of that club do you actually want? What kind of team do you actually want? And whenever we've asked players this, they want a inclusive, positive club. Like, you know, obviously they do. So, and they don't even like the homophobic and sexist banter and negative banter. They prefer it would stop overwhelmingly. So I think, you know, it's just around, the answer is really obvious. We just need to get everyone to decide that they want a better environment, and then there will be a better environment. But until that conversation is had, nothing's going to change.
Do we also need to, I suppose, tackle this masculinity, this unhealthy masculinity at the school level, where, and stop it from permeating throughout other sports as these people start to get older? Do we need to tackle it somewhere else as well?
Well, I mean, I don't study school specifically, but I know that it's typically in sport environments where LGBTQ plus young people feel the most fearful, are the most fearful. So that would be school, changing rooms, sports field, PE class. So in the school environment, this is sort of the worst area for them. And so I think, you know, what's interesting, and your listeners may not know this, that there's a strong link between the use of homophobic language by young men and gender-based violence. So boys who use homophobic language are about three times more likely to engage with gender-based violence, you know, violence against a woman, sexual violence, later in life. And so the links are all there, and it all sort of starts at this toxic masculinity, as you said. You know, men are better than women, and I'm going to degrade gay people as a proxy for degrading women. And so we need to address that problem, and really it comes down to group dynamics. The group needs to decide to change the culture in there, and that has to be individual club. It has to be club by club, has to make a decision. You can't do this from the outside.
Eric, great to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us today on Drive.
Yeah, thanks for your interest, and let's see if the AFL actually does something this time, but I'm not holding out a lot of hope.
Keep us posted. Thank you, Dr. Eric Dennison from Monash University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.